Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. We're here live at Build 2018. This is the second day, and I'm joined in a room today by Evan, Bob, Russell, myself, and our special guest, Jessica Dean, who's going to be chatting with us a little bit about VSTS and Kubernetes. But before we get to that, we do have some news. So, guys, anyone want to jump in here with any interesting things you heard today?
I think the first thing that we wanted to draw attention to is the Azure mobile app being generally available now so that you can manage some of your resources directly from your mobile phone. So,
I was thinking the old mobile app service. Yeah, you're talking the actual phone app at that point. Oh, that's
right.
Nice.
Yeah. So you can see the resource you've got available. You can shut some of them down, see how they're costing you money and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So don't need to be at your desk.
Cool. One that stood out for me, because I do a lot of work with the Azure Marketplace, is this private offers. This just went live on the blog just a little bit ago. One of the program managers that I know very well, Ankit, had announced that we're doing this private offers, which kind of sounds backwards from a marketplace. We actually want to expose things, not make them private. But in certain cases, we want to do like limited beta releases and things like that, where we want to target specific customers. But we still want to leverage Azure as a distribution mechanism. And so that's what this is all about. So it's in public preview today, I think. And so go check that out, especially if you're an ISV or anybody who's working with us on the marketplace.
Yeah, so right actually from within your Azure portal, you can go take a look at your AKS cluster health. You can go really granular and see your pods and what containers are running. I think Scott Hanselman actually did a demo of that and kind of walked through that. So you do have to install monitoring on your AKS cluster. But it's really rich data that previously I think you would get just from running kubectl proxy or kubectl for anyone who's listening that is married to a particular pronunciation. But it's really powerful because now you can get that information in your Azure dashboard as opposed to having to go and get it into a Kubernetes dashboard from kubectl and connect to an API, et cetera.
So it looks pretty easy to set up as well. I think when you
super simple.
Yep.
I believe so. And then if you actually already have an AKS cluster that was created prior to anything new, you can actually go into the monitoring and health on your like overview and dashboard, scroll down, and I think it's just a button you click that's going to go through and set it up. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Well, so now that we made her talk, we should probably introduce her at that point.
Oh, yes.
So go ahead, take the floor, Jessica.
Hi, my name is Jessica Dean, and I am a cloud developer advocate here at Microsoft and here at Microsoft Build. So a little bit about me. My background is actually Linux, open source, containers, and IT operations. So I would not be what would possibly be considered a traditional developer. But I
was going to say, and you're here, right,
at Microsoft. I'm here at a developer conference and Microsoft, and I have two Macs in my bag, and I have not been kicked out. And I actually did two presentations with my Mac. So yeah, no, I'm here at Microsoft. It's awesome. But it's kind of cool because I actually work on what's called the League of Extraordinary Cloud DevOps Advocates, or what we just call ourselves very simply, the League. But being that my background is actually more IT operations, we really kind of embody and embrace what that definition is because we're led by Donovan Brown. We have Abel Wang and Damian Brady, all three of which have very heavy dev backgrounds. And then Stephen Morawski and myself both have very operations, IT backgrounds, but we really kind of work together. We kind of bridge that gap, no wall kind of concept, and we can really kind of show and demonstrate that DevOps world. But what's also cool is so when I always introduce myself and my bullet point has Linux, open source, containers, IT, nowhere does it say DevOps. And somebody once asked me, they're like, you work on a DevOps team. Why is DevOps not on your slide? And the reason why is just because it's really truly a part of everything I do. I don't think I need to define it as far as a bullet point, but it's more so of a culture and a concept and something I really embody. And it's a choice that I've made to implement those practices. So that's a little bit about my history. So if you hashtag LOECDA at any point in time, it does light up our Teams room, and we can go in and see anybody who sent that hashtag. But it's funny because he mentions it also in any talk, so does every member of the league, but we call it our bat signal. And so last night I was at a women in non-binary event in the evening, and somebody actually comes over to me and is like, wait, you work on Donovan Brown's team. I was like, yeah. They're like, so you're part of the bat team. And I looked and I was like, yes, the league. And they're like, yeah, you're part of Donovan's bat signal. And it was hilarious, but it's so awesome to kind of see how that spreads and how we're really kind of getting out there in the community. Even if it's fun, they know who we are. They know that we're also a component of, or we're just a subdivision, I want to say, of the cloud developer advocacy team here at Microsoft. So Donovan's team, we're only 5 people. We focus on DevOps, but there's 60 people, and it's growing, so that number might actually be a little low. There's a large number of people that are cloud developer advocates at Microsoft, and they focus on everything aside from just DevOps. They focus on IoT or machine learning or AI or big data, high scale data, distributed systems, you name it. It's really an awesome team to work for, and it's an awesome time to be a part of Microsoft. So, I mean, the bat signal, all joking aside, we also have for that larger team, hashtag Azure Avengers. And I think if you follow at Azure Advocates, I mean, we just take the Twitter trending hashtags and just run wild with it.
That's awesome. Support by Twitter at that point.
Yeah,
that's super cool. So, like, in the Kubernetes front, maybe you could talk a little bit about some of the things you've seen kind of advancing there. We talked about a little bit in the news, but what are some of the things that stick out in your mind, like working with some of this new container orchestration and these type of, like, activities?
So I think the coolest thing is that, and maybe people don't know, but number one, with Azure Kubernetes Service, it's not a fork that Microsoft has. This is 100% upstream Kubernetes. Microsoft actually contributes to the Kubernetes upstream, along with Google, along with Amazon, but you have all these major companies that are actually working together to really kind of push this upstream Kubernetes, and then that's ultimately what goes down into AKS. And we work very heavily with the Kubernetes community. Then you also have tools like release automation tools that simplify your Kubernetes experience, tools like Draft or Helm or Brigade or Koshti. And those tools actually are led right by, those are tools for Kubernetes, but they're led by Microsoft. We have Microsoft teams that focus on it. Helm and Draft specifically, I believe, were started by the Deis team, and then Microsoft acquired Deis a little over a year ago now. And it's awesome to kind of work directly with those teams, and then to also kind of get to go out and interact with the community and really talk about how, especially being at Microsoft Build, for example, how that can simplify and streamline a developer's experience. So for the traditional Windows developer, who might not know a thing about Kubernetes or a thing about Windows containers or containers in general, but they've been doing .NET or they know .NET Core. And they want to get started, they want to embrace DevOps practices, they want to work with their DevOps teams and operations, but they don't know things about Helm charts or they don't know about this Kubernetes cluster stuff. You can actually set up your dev environment to where it's going to simplify all this for you. And for example, with Draft, you can use Draft Create, which would create your Docker file. You don't have to write it. Creates your charts, so you don't have to worry about what it's going to deploy out into Kubernetes. And so then you can still do all your local dev and debug work. And Abel and I showed this actually in a session yesterday called Best Practices with Kubernetes on Azure. And I believe you can watch it now on YouTube and Channel 9. But we demonstrated how simple it is to where Abel, as a developer background, can sit there and work on his C# application, get it all working, push his code out into VSTS, and then I can come in and say, okay, well, actually, the image didn't run properly because we have to set up secrets and go through all this Kubernetes stuff, and I can go in now and edit the Helm charts and add in certain things and work on my infrastructure and my background and what's familiar to me, and then together we can collaborate and ultimately produce a working application. So I think it's a really awesome time to be alive, but also it's just a really awesome time to kind of be a part of these tools, and especially since they're all fueled by open source community, it's all available for anybody else to contribute, pull requests. I have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, it sounds like if you look at what are in our DNA as a company, right, is that enabling of other people to accomplish things, and once we kind of got fully on board with containers and Kubernetes, right, we're layering in some of the smarts and the history we have around, you know, tying in VSTS, tying in, you know, some of the tooling and stuff, just to make it so that you don't, like, I have to admit, I'm a developer history. I couldn't start with containers. And for the last, you know, year or two, looking at it, going, man, that looks cool. I hear a lot about it, but I have no idea how to get started. I see some of the announcements coming in some of the ways that we're saying. It's like, wow, I might actually be able to go do this and be successful. And I think that's where we're going, right, is we're enabling other people to run this stuff. And then now with AKS, right, you don't even need to know how to do that part. You just deploy it to AKS. You don't need to manage the cluster.
Well, and along those lines, even just deploying it to AKS, some people might be listening and be like, well, I have no idea how to even create an AKS cluster. And I know there's Azure Command Line and all these other things, but I still don't know what to do. VSCS sounds awesome, but I don't know how to create a VSCS account. I have an Azure account, but I don't know where to begin. And now, actually announced yesterday, was also the AKS DevOps project.
Yeah.
So you can go into the DevOps project, you click the little plus sign, you choose your framework, and I think for AKS support, by default, it's .NET Core, Node, and Java, I want to say. Don't quote me 100%, but I believe. And so then you walk through, and you can actually choose Kubernetes as the endpoint of where you want. And it'll spin up a Kubernetes cluster for you. It'll spin up an Azure Container Registry for you. So from a dev, you don't have to do any of that.
Yeah, you don't need to know
any of
that.
And it even builds your pipeline. So for you, you can take your C# like code, you can drop that into the code repository, and all the best practices, all the wiring, everything will actually fire it off and push your app out, even with Helm charts. Like, it uses a Helm plugin.
Yeah.
It's incredibly powerful. It's so awesome to see.
It's funny, because now when we have these interns or people who come, like we call them mocks, like coming out of college into Microsoft, and they'll be like, man, this is a lot to learn. This is a lot of work. I was like, us dinosaurs who used to build this by hand, that's a lot of work that's going on there, my friend. Like load balancers and like all these different infrastructure. We had to do that by hand, you know?
Well, even so, I walked in right at the tail end of Gabe Monroy's session that preceded mine today, which was Container DevOps and Azure. It's getting started. Let's walk you through it. What is a container? But at the very end of his session, he was talking about projects like, so if you're already familiar with Let's Encrypt and how Let's Encrypt issues SSL certificates, now you have projects like KubeLego, which is actually Helm chart. And yes, for anyone who is familiar with it and who's listening, it is deprecated, but you can still use it. It's replaced by Cert Manager. But again, all these Helm charts that streamline this process. So if I have a brand new Kubernetes cluster, I first set up KubeLego on there or Cert Manager. And then I have either HTTP routing set up in AKS in Azure, which is also a new feature that I think was first introduced about a week or two ago, and that was done largely in part to both Lockie Evanson and Jess Frizzell. Jess Frizzell is another CDA, but they set up the ability to essentially have an Nginx ingress controller. So anytime you route any application that you deploy to that Nginx ingress controller, it's going to talk to the Let's Encrypt pod that's going to automatically pull an SSL certificate for you anytime it hits that.
That's awesome.
And I have a blog post that's actually walks specifically about how all that works. That went live yesterday. We demoed it in the session, but it's just, I mean, you think about what we had to do as like IT or ops.
Get a cert on something? Forget it.
I'm like going, I'm registering, I'm trying to do TLS handshakes and stuff, and you're listening to, again, like the newbie developers or the newbie like rookies coming in just out of college, they're like, wait, I have to spin up oh my gosh, this is hard. Let's go back 10 years ago.
Yeah. Oh
my gosh.
There was a whole support team just for doing SSL. I mean,
I remember one of the companies I worked for, I had to send a service ticket and be like, can somebody else go create the cert for me? And it'll be available in a week. It has to go through the approval process.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Awesome. No, this is super cool stuff. Anything else like on the DevOps side, like themes that you're seeing? Obviously, Kubernetes is something that's really popular now and in the news a lot. But just from a pure, and I don't want to use the word DevOps, but just from a pure like motion that you're seeing out there in the industry, what are some of the themes you're seeing out there, you know, beyond like just containers?
I think really just the drive to make sure you're implementing those good DevOps practices. Like, we are now starting to see more infrastructure as code, which is really awesome to see. Because speaking about going back to 5 or 10 years ago and how you would have like traditional virtualization and you have your system set up with maybe a gold master image or a clone of something and you're having snapshots and great, okay, so I stood up this dev environment. Now I go over to QA and the workflow before from dev, you hand me this package and you're like, well, it works on my system. Doesn't work on yours, it's your server.
I just remember the support, you know, because I come out of support world and, you know, well, we moved this app from, you know, ran fine in QA and prod's identical. We swear, are you sure it's identical? Yes, we're sure it's identical.
Yeah, but it never is.
No, never. No. And there's no way to keep it identical either.
Well, we know it's not because production's production. There's actual real users, it's never the same thing.
There's always going to be manual updates. Somebody's always already peeing over doing something. So it gets a little messy. And now to be able to have infrastructure as code and I can take whatever I spun up in this instance, I can replicate it out in this instance, and then that does still go back to containers. I know everyone says, well, outside of containers, also a containers advocate. But you can have, I mean, essentially that's an encapsulated runtime environment, right? Now I can make sure that that app, everything, all the app dependencies, no matter where I put, it becomes immutable, right? I can move it. Yep. It makes it where, again, it's simplified. It reduces failures. So on estimated, you have 60 times fewer failures. And in the event of a failure, you're 168 times faster to recover because you have these tools and these resources. By the way, that's statistics back in a Puppet Lab. So I'm not just pulling those stats out of my Puppet Lab survey. I'm not pulling those stats out of my head. I am pulling it out of my head, but I'm not pulling it out of anywhere else.
DevOps is going to put me out of a job in support. It's going to put me out of a job eventually.
You were worried about this yesterday.
Yeah, I'm more worried now. I'm not feeling better.
You should just be becoming friends.
Well,
with these folks.
It's funny that you say that because actually I feel like that's actually probably the IT pros mindset. And there's a book that actually talks about it. So I think it's called The Phoenix Project, which for anybody who's new to DevOps, do recommend reading it. It takes place for kind of, especially if you're like that sole IT guy or gal or whatever pronoun you want at your industry. And you're used to being the go-to person. And you're worried like, okay, well, if I start implementing these practices, how do I know that I'm still going to be valuable? You're going to be more valuable. So just because when you're implementing these kinds of practices, just because you're putting in these new setups and pipelines and everything, you're now setting it up for your team to be successful. You're encouraging other people who come after you. You can advance forward. You're no longer having to get those phone calls at 2 and 3 a.m.
You're not the bottleneck anymore. Yeah.
You're not the bottleneck anymore. You're no longer getting the calls at 2 or 3 a.m. because the CEO can't watch the cat video that for some reason was deployed from your CI/CD pipeline. No, I'm kidding. But you're not getting the calls that's waking you up that this service crashed, that service crashed, and you're the only one who has the answer. It really does make it to where you are able to relax, you're able to focus your efforts on working with your developers, furthering that success. And ultimately, I mean, when you think about the definition of DevOps, which I always quote Donovan Brown's definition, because I do believe it, and so does the rest of his team, but DevOps is the union of people, process, and products to enable continuous delivery of value to its end users. And so whether you're a developer, whether you're IT pro, as long as you can continuously deliver value, you are valuable. You're no longer having to worry about, well, I'm not going to be able to do anything and contribute, so I'm going to be out of a job. That's as long as you're able to be a part of this process and work together, you're delivering value. And then that's where also, by the way, spinning up that AKS project, it also sets up application insights for you. So now you can get that rich telemetry that you're used to getting maybe in your container apps or your web app services or your virtual machines. You can now get it for your Kubernetes apps and services. So I can take a look at that telemetry and see, am I delivering value? Where are my users located? What are my users doing with it? I can get that data. What are the server requests? Is it up and running? I'm able to react that much faster and figure out what the next iteration is.
It feels like you're always improving anyhow. I mean, we're always improving applications, right? So if you're saying, well, I'm worried about my job, or let's say you're not, you're saying, hey, let's go ahead and automate the heck out of this thing. Once I do have that automation in place, now I can focus on these things. I'm saying,
you mean that my free time actually becomes free time to go learn something new.
You actually get free time.
Yeah.
I remember when I first started out, I was still very young. Anytime I had a new client, I worked for a variety of different companies, and some of them were also very public serving. I would sometimes have residential clients, but also usually it was like small to mid-sized businesses. You're talking to CTOs and CEOs, and as I'm sitting there fixing whatever is broken, they're making small talk, right? They're like, oh, this is great. So you love what you do? Yeah. What do you do in your free time? And I looked at them, I was like, wait, people have free time?
Is that
allowed? I just remember I was stuck. I never had an answer. And now it's like, what are you doing in free time? Well, I go camping. I go hiking. I have a lifted car with a rooftop tent on top, so I sleep on top of my roof. I get to have fun. I get to do things now, which is nice. I get to be a human. So somebody once asked, actually, Kelsey Hightower, they did it in a tweet, when should I use Kubernetes or when should I not? And his exact, I mean, so for those who don't know, I mean, Kelsey Hightower is a pretty big name at Google, pretty much wrote most of Kubernetes. I think he's also now famous for the whole no-code project. But when somebody tweeted, he pretty much replied saying, if you're already using something that works, you don't have to use Kubernetes. So if you do like Service Fabric, or you're doing functions, or you're doing something that's serverless, by all means, keep doing what's working for you. Kubernetes is just another option. And what I love most about Azure, and I think what I loved most about the keynote yesterday, was the definition of Azure is it's your computer. It's the world's computer, right? So whatever tool you need, whatever you want to accomplish, there's something out there for you. There's a tool out there for you. There's a feature out there for you. Dare I say there's a function out there for you, or container, or pod, or serverless or Service Fabric, whatever you need, there's something out there for you. So I don't necessarily think that you're missing out. If you don't think that you need it, I don't want to say if you don't think you need it now, then you probably don't, because that might be wrong. I don't know the environment for who is ever listening, but be aware and be conscious of what's out there. But again, if Functions and Service Fabric or serverless or whatever is working for your workflow, keep moving in that direction. When you do start having needs for containers and pods and services and databases, and you start having a larger collection maybe of things that you might want to get easier, that might be your use case to switch over and take a look at Kubernetes. You can also leverage things like Functions in addition to Kubernetes clusters. You're not married to choose one or the other. You can leverage these tools to work in conjunction and work together. I wouldn't say necessarily lift and shift. I mean, especially like if you are using like C# and ASP.NET right now and not .NET Core, you are still going to have to refactor. You are still going to have to move that over. Right now, the big part of containers is going to be Linux containers. I know a lot of people are still asking for Windows containers. I believe it is in private preview right now, so that feature is coming. But until it is, you're still going to have to take a look at that. The other benefit of refactoring and having to recode that, say, over into .NET Core, or even moving over into something that might be a little bit more immutable, would be that, I mean, Windows images are huge, so they're going to have a lot of layers. It's a lot of caching. It's still going to take a long time to kind of spin up. So there are certain benefits to make things a little bit lighter, move a little bit faster. However, if you don't have to go through that and you're already using something that's serverless or, again, with Service Fabric, and then you still are able to move from your ASP.NET over into, honestly, since my background's Linux, I'm not going to know a lot of the Windows stuff. But if that part is already easier, then stick with what's easier right now. But the biggest use case I can think of is if you, again, do have .NET Core applications and you have databases and you have volume claims or needs that you're needing to run these very large workloads, using a Kubernetes cluster or using something that's, I guess, gives you that option to have microservices, that's going to be probably your benefit. And then you can use things like, you can take advantage of the release automation tools like Helm and Draft, and you can kind of streamline and bundle that up. Because the nice thing with Helm and Helm charts, just as in the AKS DevOps project, is it packages it up into Tarball, so it's easy distribution. So not only can I have images in an image repository, I can even have a Helm chart repository, and I can make it private. So I can keep all the different versions of my chart and make that more repeatable, so to speak, because I can roll back, I can go upgrades, I can go to previous releases, and I can call that. So all my infrastructure, including my application, all that's now in code. So if those are features and benefits you think would be applicable to your enterprise, that would be the use case. If you don't need those features and you have reasons for why you're still sticking with Service Fabric, and that's not a bad choice, I don't want that to come across, but for why you're using Service Fabric and Functions, keep doing that.
It feels like because I think some of the same things you do, Russell, about that. It feels like if you can do, it's kind of like the SaaS versus, you know, PaaS questions, right? Am I better to do SaaS or am I better to do PaaS? Well, it depends. Can you get what you want with SaaS? Well, yeah, okay, great. That's probably going to be your cheapest approach, but you're limited. There are things you can't do. You don't have full control over the environment. If you need a little bit more control, that pushes you back to a PaaS, then if you need more, it pushes you back to IaaS. I feel similar with the serverless and the container stuff. If I can get done with what I need to do with serverless, with Functions or whatever, where I just write the code, I don't care how it gets implemented, that's probably the easiest piece. But the chance of me being able to do my entire app 100% there, probably not true. So then I start moving back towards, not back, I move over to containers and say, okay, I need a little bit more control. So yeah, containers are the right place to be.
Because then even with containers, again, like with that control, not only am I running like one part of my app, I have my database, I have networking, I have ingress controllers, I have volume claims so I can persist my data storage. I can even go down into like image pull secrets and create a YAML for that. I mean, I can get so granular. I can link that out to RBAC and role-based access control, and there's just so much control over that. But if you don't need that much control,
why add that? If you don't need it, you don't need it.
Then you're adding additional overhead. And again, there for anybody listening where you're worried from IT that you wouldn't be valuable, learning these new tools, again, you're still adding value. And you no longer have to be the only person who knows this, but you're setting up a pipeline where you understand how this flows and how these tools work and how to implement and networking and all the things that devs don't understand, but then everything on my end, I don't understand from devs. That I'm not aware of?
Yeah, they were just talking about this. So basically, what was the overlying service of that? It was AKS, like traditional. So we had like virtual machines and that kind of thing. And then we could burst over into ACI instances, which are basically just
They're very, yeah.
Lightweight, you know, containers.
It's backed by Kubernetes for ACI, but they're single instances where you can just very quickly run an image in Kubernetes. You don't have access to the cluster. You can't make any changes or whatever to your agent pool. You can't control, like, secrets or namespaces. You're just running an image.
I see. Okay,
yeah.
That's cool.
So that's Azure Container Instances.
Yeah.
I did not hear about the bursting, truth be told. I have seen as many announcements as I can, but I also was in a session yesterday, in a session today, podcast tonight, at Lounge Duty tomorrow. There's so much going on, and it's so awesome sometimes to hear all the different things, but some of them just go right over my head, and I work with these teams, which is even crazier.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and then I think of one of the new things also, what was the name of it? What was it, data sets? There was a new feature also, I know I'm blanking on the wrong name, but there's a new feature with AKS where also for developers, if you wanted to kind of play with your own sandbox environment with AKS and Kubernetes, they also have your own, I want to say it's data sets, but I might be really wrong. It's your own kind of little playground.
Mini cluster. And we talked about that with Donovan or somebody, I think.
Dev spaces. Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So that was the other thing Scott showed yesterday in the yesterday session. And that's also Kubernetes. I mean, there's just been so many announcements. I joke with people, especially when I come out of session. I was like, my brain's at capacity. I have to, like, kill storage off, wait for a new pod to spin up, store more information. But, yeah. Yep. And it's your area, especially for developers, it's your area to go play with and to really kind of get comfortable with.
And if it isn't dev spaces, then it's going to be deploying containers to the edge. So there's going to be a reason for everyone to start getting involved and try and understand what it is and see, like we talked about with the patterns, you know, what's the right pattern that applies to you and when do containers make sense, when does AKS make sense for you?
Well, and it's funny. So actually, I mean, it's cool that you can do that also in the cloud. But for anyone who still might feel a little uncomfortable with cloud and wants to debug and have that kind of local breakpoint experience maybe in your local environment, that was what the session Abel and I did yesterday. We're actually even using Draft. You set all this up in your local environment. You can actually, especially with .NET or .NET Core specifically, you can set up your debugger within VS Code to attach to your container that was created from Draft and actually do local debugging without even ever hitting the cloud. Which that was kind of really cool. And so we demoed that. I mean, you can go watch that and stream that.
That's
on
container debugging on a plane.
Yeah,
right
exactly.
There.
Yeah. There you go, Kale. Next trip you're on, you can debug it on the way.
You can no longer give your boss an excuse of, I'm sorry, I was on the plane. There was no Wi-Fi. Work harder. Just kidding.
No, this has been great. So thank you so much, Jessica, for coming by and talking through all this with us. And guys, do you have any other questions before we wrap up here?
No, I'm going to have to break down and do this because the more we talk about it, the more it feels achievable, right? And I'm just going to have to break down and go do it. And I'll probably go, why did I wait?
So it's funny because, and I'll kind of end on this story, but I've been traveling truly the world talking about containers and Linux and all this awesome stuff that we've been doing. And one of the sessions I gave in Orlando back in March, I want to say. So in Orlando, at Orlando Code Camp, it was the first time the league ever got together and was in the same room. Because we all went to the league, we all did sessions. And so all of us also went to each other's sessions. So it was also the first time we all got to see each other speak. It was really cool. But everyone, when they walked into my session, which they also actually all walked in late, but it was perfect timing because I just got done with my slide where I was like, and talking about the league. And like on cue, the league comes walking in the room. Oh my gosh, I wish everyone were wearing a cape. Speaking of, if Donovan's listening to this podcast at a later date, can I expense capes? Anyway, so it was the first time everyone was also getting to see my particular presentation. I remember more than half of the league is primarily a dev background, right? So Abel's sitting in there, and Abel was the person that I did the session with yesterday. And for the longest time, I partnered with Abel on a multitude of sessions. But anytime Kubernetes or containers comes up, he's the typical dev of like, hands up in the air, I don't want to know, don't understand, I barely can pronounce Kubernetes. So he's sitting in the session, and his tweet ended up getting retweeted because he said, oh my gosh, I actually finally understand what a container is. Blew my mind, never understood what a container is. Like he finally got it. But then after that session, not only did he finally understand a container and Dockerfile, him and I partnered up to deliver the session yesterday at Build. He didn't understand Draft. He didn't understand Helm. He knew container and he knew Docker kind of, but he didn't get Kubernetes. And most importantly, he didn't understand why it was important for him to care as a dev. And so he finally got to kind of play around with this and take a look at Helm. And the second he started diving deep, I got a text from him. I was in New York. I was actually on vacation. And it's okay, Abel can still tell me text when I'm on vacation. But he says, oh my gosh, I can't believe I wasn't using this sooner. And coming from as what he would put an old school, like old as dirt dev like him, like that's just a really powerful statement. And even when we first started mapping out, okay, what are we going to talk about in our session? How are we going to deliver this? How are we going to make this content relevant to Windows developers? And the first thing he said, he's like, well, I mean, I know that I'm kind of learning this, but I don't know if I really add value. I don't know if I, like, do I have a purpose? Maybe this should just be your show. And I said, the fact that you don't speak this language, you are the audience. You are immensely valuable. The audience doesn't care what I say. They're not going to listen to me. I'm Linux open source. I've been talking containers until I'm blue in the face. I talk about it when I'm drinking. I have truly, at a bar, pulled out my phone with PowerPoint and gone through a slide deck. I'm that much of a nerd. Granted, I did it with other cloud developer advocates, so they're probably paid to listen to me anyway. But he's really the core audience, right? So him being able to talk about it and say how valuable, that's what I think really brought it home. So it's funny you joke about that, but now I've heard that. And again, for anyone who's interested, please go watch our session because he's able to explain why it really is important from a old school or even new school developer.
So if Abel can do it, we can all do it.
That's the hashtag. If Abel Wang can do it, everyone can do it. Everyone can be a rock star.
Awesome.
Hashtag rock star.
Thanks again, everybody, for joining in here, and especially to our special guests. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.